Off the ball. Rugby.
It's a more appealing game to watch, for example, New Zealand than Ireland, South Africa, because of the way South Africa, brilliantly tactically set up to win games.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
You're listening to OTB's Breakfast Bite. Yeah!
Very briefly on the papers, on the front page of the Irish Times, Fenton's farewell, dub star to retire. Now, it's not a story on the front page, but it is on the front page. And then you open the sports section, and on the front page of Sports Tuesday is Heimer Hallgrimsson. And the second page is Rory McIlroy. And the third page is Owen Doyle and Derek Coyne. And the fourth page is the Racing. Page five of the sports section, we've got here eventually. Fenton hangs up his boots, leaving huge void at the heart of Dublin. Bombshell news, Tommy, really. Like, in one of those shocked that I'm not shocked, but still shocking pieces of news.
Yeah, yeah. And in fairness to the sub-editors and the papers or the team putting it together, it was 10:45 last night, I think, when Gordon Manning broke the news online, reportedly, that Brian Fenton has retired. I say reportedly only for the fact that we haven't heard from Dublin. It's not often that the Dubs don't break this kind of news, if it is to be broken itself. Absolutely seismic news. I will be honest, it's been on the grapevine. It was on the grapevine last year as well. I think Brian Fenton himself was very open about it. I know he's been at Electric Picnic a couple of times off the ball in the off-season in the last couple of years. And he's been very relaxed and had great conversations with Nathan and Owen. I'm not sure were you at a chair one of the years as well, but you know, he's always in great form at those. And I think he always takes the off-season to take time and take stock and have a think about it. And even last year when I caught up with him last November, we were talking a little bit, even off air, about just having to make the decision. The thing is, he's just 31. We've been having conversations in the last couple of weeks about Paul Conroy winning Footballer of the Year at 35. Will Conor McManus stay on? Michael Murphy going back to the fold? And the question has been, which of the Dubs will stay on? And we have a bit of news ourselves later on that we might bring listeners of Dublin fans. I'm not sure if it's going to make them feel better or not, the news we have on the football pod. But it seems to me like 2023 took a lot out of all of them emotionally. And that might be something that we get to. That just being able to get the band back together, bring it all together for one last dance to reclaim that All-Ireland title, I think it took a lot out of all of them. And while he may be just 31, it's a decade, an unbelievable decade with the Dubs. Have you ever seen anything like him, Ger, on the football field?
I caught the very end of Jack O'Shea, like very end, but enough to be like, wow, look at this, this is incredible. And I think he's a very unique player in that he could do a lot of things brilliantly. You know, I think that one of the weird things that kind of happened, most of the Dubs who make it, we hear about them through their underage exploits, but that didn't happen in this case for various reasons. So he kind of emerged fully formed to the public's consciousness, who aren't going to the O'Byrne Cup games, who aren't watching Dublin club matches, and arrived as a footballer of the year contender on a team that was winning and then never lost, like basically for the first 6 years. It's truly remarkable.
Yeah, he was part of that 2014 All-Ireland winning side that Desi would have coached. And that was kind of when the grumblings first started coming, that, oh, they've got something coming here. I think he was on a Sigerson campaign with UCD. But I even remember kind of being around Dublin those days and people that were maybe playing against him in college being like, oh, I didn't know he was that good. And then those voices started quieting down as, you know, he makes his debut year, as you said, in 2015, wins an All-Ireland, man of the match in that All-Ireland final, don't you forget. I think he's a contender for Footballer of the Year in 2016. He wins it in 2018. He still hasn't lost the game in Leinster. I think he's lost one game in league football, in championship football. He hasn't even lost a game by that stage. You know, 2020, he wins the second Footballer of the Year crown. In 2021, he finally loses a game of football, championship football, to Mayo, and you know, had a very good game that day himself. 2023 again, or 2022, you know, the Kerry game. But like, the other thing that's worth noting is like, Fenton's pretty much an ever present in league and championship under Desi Farrell. Like, I think he's up there with, oh, he's definitely played 60 odd games under Farrell out of, you know, has there been 70, you know, between the COVID years and league football and the kind of broken down championship the last couple of years. So he's been virtually an ever present. He also played more minutes than anybody in the five in a row, six in a row campaign. So, God, Brian Fenton, like, just it. When you go through the players that could have retired, you know, it's such a kind of central cog to that team as well there in midfield. You mentioned 2015, Ger. That, I think, and we might get to that in a couple of minutes, that, when you think about it, was the perfect concoction of, you know, Gavin's under-21s that have won in All-Ireland, in McCarthy and Cooper and Dean Rock, in the boys that were there with Pillar, in, you know, Andrews, Bernard Brogan, Alan Brogan, Bastic, Connolly, that had kind of grown up and been ready to, you know, take the mantle. And then you had the boys in 93 coming alive in Brian Fenton, John Small, Jack McCaffrey, Kieran Kilkenny. How many players do you think from that team are left?
Left playing senior football for the Dubs.
For Dublin, yeah.
I don't know, at the moment.
It started at a Learning Final against Kerry in 2015.
Well, you say as we stand today, Tommy, because
that's the thing, as we stand today, right now.
The rumour mill is an overdrive. I'm sure you're getting the same text I'm getting about the other people who might be stepping away. And the grapevine is that this could be a bleak, bleak winter for Dublin and maybe a new dawn for the rest of Leinster. But we'll park that for the minute. How many are left? Three, four, six?
Up to starting 15. Kieran Kilkenny is left.
Cluxton.
Well, I was going to get to those two.
Okay, go on.
Cluxton is left and Jack McCaffrey is left.
The book is called The Irish Experience, from the GAA to the AFL, and it's Zach Dewey's book, written by friend of the show, Catherine Murphy. Before we go to Australia, can you talk to us a bit about your upbringing? I found it really interesting that your dad had a life of public service in work and then becomes a local politician. I actually didn't know any of that about your background, but I think we as a country sometimes don't. You see Michael O'Leary talking shite about teachers last week, and I'd say he'd say the same about anybody who has given their life to public service, you know. And it's kind of weird for me as a society, because we don't function without our teachers and our nurses and our prison officers. And your dad lived that life.
Yeah. Yeah, this was one of the most enjoyable parts of the book for me. So my father working in the prison service for as long as he did was at the time deeply unremarkable, because it was just what that he did. It's all I've known him to do. And I talk about my heading off in his, you know, pale blue shirt, the uniform that he used to wear every day. And it's just what he did. It's only now that I've a bit older and speaking to my parents about, you know, what it was like and some of the potential hazards of doing that job for a long term and in maximum security prison. But the fact that he then went on and became a counsellor was not surprising at all. That's kind of been his, like, his personality has always been that he's been deeply invested in the community in Port Laois, and that's probably part of the reason I feel so tightly bound to it, despite the fact I've left. But yeah, it was, you know, it was probably the most enjoyable, and it snuck up on me a bit how much I was going to be kind of caught off guard by what he did and some of his stories. But.
Yeah, and so you're writing this book in Australia. Catherine obviously works in Australia, and you're remembering what it's like to be a kid in Port Laois, thinking about your dad and 20 years previously, you know, the peak of the troubles and all the IRA prisoners are in Port Laois, and you're kind of trying to imagine what that life is like. It's the type of thing that you only really start doing when you either write a book or you reach a certain maturity in life. You have kids and you're like, oh, actually, this isn't as easy as I thought it was.
Yeah, it's probably the kids. It's probably the moment you become a parent for the first time. And I'm really lucky in that, although my career's had some mostly ups, but it's had some really tough years where I was really struggling. For the most part, I've always been able to do a job I was really invested in and really loved. And I think he loved his job and career as well. But I think he did what he did out of necessity for the family. And I got to do what I did because I more or less just love playing football. And so I was really fortunate in that regard. But yeah, I think, you know, when you're young, you just kind of look up to your parents and idolise them. And then there's probably that rebellious phase in the middle. And then you go back to idolising them again when you're in your own adulthood.
You and your wife, Beck, have two kids, but you're training up on epidurals. You've had three epidurals, she's had zero. I mean, the life of an AFL star is exhilarating, but it's brutal.
I think she may have gone through a couple of pregnancies, but she's never blown a disc out playing football. I'm not saying it's worse, but I'm saying it's different. And so I've had a dodgy back in my football career, and I'm currently three epidurals in.
Like, and is it a case that you're waking up every day with pain?
No, not out. The only thing, my back is the constant thing that's flared up in my career. I've been really lucky with injuries, and there's been a couple of specific instances where I was kind of fine leading into games and then it just went on me and it went really bad. But even that, you only miss a few weeks with that. It's just a constant maintenance thing. The only part of my body is my knee in the last. It was at the end of 2018 I hurt, and it's just never gone away. And while I was able to drag out my career for 8 years or six, 7 years since then, I think that's probably the one that's most impacted me as an athlete. Yeah.